Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:08 PM. That is Pacific Summer Time. Today is August 12th. And gold today was pretty much unchanged by the close, but it was a pretty volatile day. And we had a sharp dip in the initial part of trading. Then it recouped all of the loss and moved to a new high very early in the morning session in Europe, but then gave up the advance by the close. So a lot of back and forth trading. And when we think about the really quite incredible advance we've had since the beginning of, or really the end of 2018, where back then gold was trading at $1,200, and just last week it was above $2,000, then we've had a spectacular advance and a very wide overextension relative to the trend mean, a very clear acceleration in the last 3 or 4 weeks. And it's quite natural to see some consolidation in this region. Now, there would have been hopes this morning that $1,900 would represent the nadir of the pullback. But when we look at the weekly chart, it's quite unlikely that $1,900 would be terminal value for this pullback. It's much more likely that $1,800 would be a natural area where we might anticipate some support coming through. It was an important area of resistance back in 2011 and 12. And logically, it should therefore start to become an area of support following the break above it. We can also see that the trend mean is still trending higher in a really quite abrupt manner, and that by the time the price steadies around $1,800, it'll probably approximate the region of the trend mean. So that, I think, is the most likely scenario. It would have been, certainly we can see that stops were triggered yesterday, and there was a really quite abrupt pullback. Then there would have been some bargain hunting coming in today, and that would have propped up the price, but it didn't hold throughout the day. So there is still some reticence to jump back into the market in full size, and there will have been a lot of people who would have been chasing this rally and wanted to buy the dip. I think there will probably be more people who would like to buy the dip when it gets back into the region of the trend mean. There will also have been people who wanted to take some profits, and those will be a little bit less inclined to buy immediately after selling. So there is the potential that we're going to get a somewhat deeper pullback and lengthier period of consolidation. And this is quite natural. In fact, we've seen plenty of examples of exactly this kind of action in previous bull markets for gold. The most important point here is that gold has broken out to new all-time highs. And as long as it sustains the majority of the advance, then we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Silver just tends to be more volatile overall. But the most important thing is that silver has completed its base formation. And I do believe that this is the beginning of the acceptance phase in terms of the three psychological perception stages of a new bull market. Then the first is disbelief. The second is acceptance, and the third is mania. We are a long way from the mania phase. We're still really only at the beginning of the acceptance phase. People finally are starting to get around to the idea that having a position in gold is a good idea. Now, that conviction is going to be challenged when we don't see the price going up every single day. And it's when gold is less loved, and when it isn't making headlines on every international site, and when the phone isn't ringing off the hook with people asking to buy gold and how to buy gold and how to increase their positions. That's generally then when we can conclude that the correction has probably run its course. So silver has pulled back by about $5, and it's unwound about half of the breakout. I don't think we're going to see silver trading back below $20 again in this cycle, at least certainly not on a sustained basis. But we could get a deep consolidation, and it's likely that we're in for a couple of months of ranging before we can see the price pushing on to new highs. And it may be longer than that. We've definitely seen periods when gold has gone sideways for anything up to a year and a half. Now, the one thing that I think is unlikely on this occasion is that we're going to see that same kind of length of time for ranging because of the urgency of zero interest rates. One thing I think is interesting is that bond yields are rising. The 10-year yield was stronger again in here today, up another 2 basis points. Now, of course, 2 basis points historically isn't an awful lot, but when we've got such low levels, it tends to be rather a lot in terms of the percentage move. But it has clearly now broken the downward bias to the yield over the course of the last 2 months. So there is the potential that we're going to see a reaction back towards the trend mean. And of course, there are questions about just how is the US government going to fund themselves. Then, of course, we can think about other countries as well. The UK has not moved into a negative interest rate environment, but a lot of the bonds in the shorter end of the curve are trading at negative yields. But now yields are starting to pop on the upside. There is some reticence to continue to buy bonds because of the clear determination of governments everywhere to devalue their currencies. And they don't have any real plan for how they're going to pay back the debt. And this has to be starting to figure into the outlook for the way that investors are thinking. Because bonds represent a risk when the supply is multiplying and governments have absolutely no intention of paying back. And this is also going to be a significant challenge when we think about the maturities at which governments are beginning to issue debt. When governments concentrate on issuing debt with very short maturities, then investors feel that they've got a reasonable hold on, some sort of security that they're going to get their principal back, and that the principal they get back will, in at least its value, will approximate the value of the currency that was used to initially purchase the bond. But when governments start stretching maturities against a background where they really don't have any intention of paying back the debt, well, or at least making any kind of concession to supporting the currency in which the debt will be paid back in, then investors have got a valid concern about the value of the currency in which they're going to get paid back in and what they're being compensated with in order to take that risk. And 23 basis points is really not a lot. One thing that I thought was particularly interesting in here today is the fact that we had these headlines that the UK economy was the worst performer in the second quarter. But the rebound that we've seen in the FTSE 250 is quite impressive, and it was in additional positive territory in here today. And when we just zoom in on the daily chart, we have a succession of ranges, one above another, and it is coming back up towards the upper side of the most recent range, which has been going on now for more than 2 months. And it's just about approximating the region of the trend mean. And the most important point is that the pound has been steady against this background, and it's back up above the 130 area against the dollar. This is a previous area of resistance, so we may get some consolidation here. When we look at it against the euro, it's been steadying around the 110 area, and it's still holding that level despite the fact that the euro was really quite firm in here today. So what we have evidence of here is that the UK stock market has been rallying against a background where the pound has been quite steady. And this is quite different to what we've seen previously, particularly over the course of the last 6 or 7 years. The outlook for both the UK and Europe has been very much tied to the weakness of their respective currencies. And yet, over the course of the last few months, they have been capable of rallying against a background where their currencies have been strengthening. This is quite different to what we've seen over the last decade, and it really should start to register with investors. particularly dollar investors, because when we look at, for example, a US dollar denominated Europe ETF, then it has rebounded really quite admirably, up almost 50% off the lows. But the more important point is that this is an asset class that has been done nothing at all for the last 12 years. And there is the potential that with the dollar being devalued, that other asset classes will do better. Europe is in with a fighting chance to break up and out of this range that's persisted for most of the last 12 years. Then when we think about Japan, well, the Japanese don't want to have the strongest currency in the world. They're willing to do whatever is necessary to ensure that that doesn't happen. And the Nikkei is firming from the region of the trend mean, and it, I think, is more likely than not going to push above the 24,000 level over the next while. And part of the reason I have that drawn that conclusion is because Taiwan has been so strong. There was a high beta, I think, relationship between Taiwan and Japan back in the 1980s. Taiwan has really just broken out to new all-time highs, and it is overbought. There is absolutely no question of that, and we are due some consolidation. We might even be seeing that that consolidation is now beginning. But the reality here is that it is at new all-time highs against a background where its currency has been quite steady, and that could be a lead indicator for Japan as well. The second section index has now pushed above the 200-day moving average. If it can hold this level, then I think there's a fighting chance here that this downtrend over the course of the last 2.5 years will have in fact been broken, and that we are now back in a demand-dominated environment. Then when we look at the Korean market, it's often looked at as a barometer for the outlook for global growth, and it has also rebounded in very emphatic fashion. It was up again in here today. It has clearly broken the downtrend over the course of the last couple of years, and this has been an incredibly impressive rebound off the lows in March. Well, then when we start to think about the heavyweights in Asia, we've got Japan, Taiwan, and Korea all starting to steady in here. The Chinese market was well off its lows in here today, although it was nominally in negative territory. There was a very long candle on the chart. Well, what this is suggesting is that we do have at least some evidence that the government is willing to step in following declines, but is unwilling to support higher values. So that does suggest that at least if it's backstopped on the downside, investors will start to give it the benefit of the doubt. But there is, I think, probably better potential in Asia rather than being forced to focus on the Chinese market and the governance uncertainty that comes with it. The Vietnamese market is probably another example of a growth driver. The broad index was in positive territory today. It's coming back up towards the region of the trend mean. If it can break this downward bias over the last couple of months and push back above the trend mean, well, we're back in a demand-dominated environment. When we look at the investment trusts, like the Vietnam Opportunities Fund, it's back above its trend mean. The continued strength of currencies like the Philippine peso are a real standout in the region. Then when we think about the stock market, it's also been steadying in here. It's got a very similar pattern to other markets in the region, but it has a much stronger currency. When we think about the Thai index, then we are also looking at the potential for recovery here, and this looks like a consolidation in the region of the trend mean. So we can also then think about the fact that a large number of markets in Asia have been trending downwards for more than 2 years. Then they accelerated lower in the lockdown phase, and then they've rebounded to unwind most of the decline. So it's now kind of do or die. It's at the point where if they're going to reassert on the upside, then this is about where that should start to happen. We still have the uncertainty of the coronavirus, and we just don't know how much of an economic impact that's going to have on these emerging markets in the short term. But it's increasingly likely that we are going to have a vaccine at some point towards the end of this year, and then the potential is that that will speed up the opening up of economies. So that's likely to be particularly beneficial in Asia, particularly because they've got demographics on their side, and that could be the catalyst for renewed enthusiasm for emerging markets, and not least because of the quantity of US dollar denominated debt that's concentrated in the emerging markets. The continued weakness in the US dollar makes that debt much more attractive and a lot easier to service. And it is certainly going to remove a headwind to the argument for investing in emerging markets. So often we see that gold and emerging markets tend to rally together. Gold has certainly gone first, and this uncertainty about the coronavirus has been a limiting factor in enthusiasm for emerging markets in the short term. But that headwind is likely to be removed as we move further into the year and into 2021 in particular. Then, when we look at the industrial metals, then the LME Metals Index has broken its downtrend. Copper prices, having pulled back really very violently on Friday, have basically rebounded and recouped the entire decline, although not quite being able to break the downward bias of the last 4 weeks. But this continues to look like consolidation. It may not yet be over. We may see some additional volatility, but the most important thing that copper has done has been to break the downtrend over the course of the last couple of years. Well, then again, we see this similar pattern where there was a pattern of underperformance by the industrial resources at the same time that emerging markets were underperforming. Now, when we think about how all of that ties together with renewed strength on Wall Street, the S&P 500 is within a couple of points of pushing on to new high ground, and it completely countermanded the decline that we saw yesterday. The Nasdaq was also in positive territory and rebounding in an emphatic fashion from around this 11,000 level. Well, that dispels the threat of a failed upside break, and it is just simply continuing to remain in this consistent advance. Well, of course, we still have the continued provision of liquidity, and it continues to pour into the large cap sector. Now, one thing that we're seeing increasingly is this enthusiasm for stock splits. Apple is thinking about a stock split, and it is certainly being rewarded by investors. It was up in a pretty dynamic manner in here today. Tesla has also announced a stock split, and the share was also in, I think, robust positive territory in here today. So there might be something of the buy the rumor, sell the news to all of this. There is a bet, particularly with Tesla, that its admittance into the S&P 500 would stoke investment demand, and that if they were to cut the or to split the shares and make the nominal price more accessible to retail traders, then that would also stoke demand. Of course, there might be also some anticipation of both those factors contributing to the recent strength. And once we in fact get those events occurring, then we may see some additional consolidation. So that's basically how buy the rumor, sell the news works. But the other point, of course, is that we have had these phenomenal accelerations. And these chart patterns having done so phenomenally well in such a short period of time, well, it may not yet be over, but we know that we're at stratospheric highs and that it requires a massive quantity of additional new liquidity to inflate asset prices further. And I think that is particularly relevant for Apple because it's at a market cap of 1.9 trillion. Well, how much of the release of a 5G phone has been priced into the share with a PE of 35? What I find interesting is that the historic PE and the future PE are exactly the same. Well, the estimate, of course, is for September, so that might also help to explain that fact. But when we then think about the what investors are starting to think about where the share might trade out to, they're not overly ambitious, really going up to about $500 and change. So that's not an especially ambitious number. And then, of course, we have the fact that we've got the clear acceleration. Well, acceleration is a trend ending. It is a significant inconsistency. How an acceleration eventually ends, whether it does so in a big dynamic fashion or whether it dribbles back down, that is likely to have an impact on what people's expectations for future potential are. But this is certainly an inconsistency. And now the question is, are we going to get this additional liquidity? There is the expectation that we certainly will, considering the actions of the US government, also of the ECB in setting up a fund to make more money available to peripheral countries. It is interesting, though, that the market has continued to rise even though the Fed's balance sheet has pretty much gone sideways. So there is a much greater reliance now on fiscal and deficit spending than we've had for a while. And when we look at deficits overall, well, we need to see a substantial additional infusion because the announced deficits has contracted. It was over 1.25 trillion at the end of July. It's contracted meaningfully. So the announcements of additional deficit spending are going to have to ramp up if we're going to continue to see these accelerations higher. But of course, there is a race on to lock down income-producing assets or anything that can deliver a yield because of the low interest rate environment, but also because of the devaluation of currencies. And while we are in a period of consolidation for gold, it is still a bull market. And eventually we will get a greater evidence of consolidation, and that will provide the next attractive buying opportunity. The fact that we've got completed base formations and a consolidation in the region of the previous peak is certainly more evidence of a new bull market versus very mature bull markets characterized by acceleration in the technology sector. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.